Betty, let me ask you, what is your disability?
It's a learning disability.
Okay, and do you get SSD, SSI? What do you get?
SSI.
And would you tell the audience, could you share with us how much money you get for SSI?
I get $564.
Okay. And is that the only federal aid you get?
Yes, but it's a little income that you can't. I was staying on West 14 in the high rise in the CMHA, and I wasn't happy because, you know, I couldn't get the things that I really want. They don't want you to have a certain amount of things that at the time they didn't want you to have.
Well, okay, but I don't want to pass this point on, though. I mean, you have been found, you did not pronounce yourself disabled. That was Social Security. They had you see doctors, right?
Yes.
And that's what you get is $564.
Yes.
Is that enough for you to live on?
Not really, because I can't, you know, for the low income, you know, you can only pay your, like, if you stand in a place for like three something and you only have a little money left over and you can't get the things that you really want to enjoy, you got other bills, you know. And it's kind of hard. So, I mean, I've been struggling because I got goals, I write, I sing, and I got other kind of talent that I'm trying to get met, too. So, I mean, I'm not giving up, and I don't want nobody to feel sorry for me, you know. And I know I'm a strong woman because I've been living under the bridges. I've been living on 21st and Superior right in front of the plane dealer. We was all in tents. You know, it was time that... You know, I was back and forth. I was staying with my family, but I couldn't get nowhere. When I wanted jobs, I couldn't. Sometimes I had to stay outside to get the things that I want done with myself.
Where are you living now?
Well, I've been outside under the bridge.
So you're getting that disability check, but you're still under a bridge.
Yes, because I'm not handling it myself. Somebody else is, but I don't. They give it to me in allowance.
I see. And so how much do you get a week?
Like $40.
There's been a lot of blessings for my having to lower my standard of living, so I don't see it as a curse, but...
Well, before I let you go, what can you name a blessing?
A blessing?
Yeah, from having a lower standard of living. That's a good topic, because we don't talk about that much in America, where it's all more, more, more. What blessing was there from that?
Slowing down. I used to work 80-hour weeks. Mm-hmm. And in slowing down, you get to see the single flower, and you get to appreciate the single hello you get on the street. And you get to spend time in meditation and contemplation. And you know how many of us say, I wish I had time to read all my books?
Yeah.
You get the time to do that.
What we find in our research is that, you know, the people who become homeless are not different in terms of their substance abuse or mental health problems than people who are poor who don't become homeless. However, people who have substance abuse problems tend to stay homeless much longer. So that's why they end up being overrepresented in the population.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's quite possible that you have one set of factors that cause people to become homeless and a separate set of factors that are associated with people who remain homeless.
Overall, have there been 10 million, 20 million, 30 million? How many people in the last 22 years or so have been homeless, had an episode of homelessness? Do we know that?
Yes, we actually, if we take the household survey that Bruce Link and his colleagues did, they said 7% was the lifetime prevalence of literal homelessness. So you take 7%, we're about... That would be about 22 million people.
Okay. Now, the last thing, because this is the part that gets me when I add these numbers up. If you think 22 million people have been homeless, and maybe at most 800,000 are on the streets at this given moment, that means 96% or more of the people who have ever been homeless got out of it.
That's right. And that's true that it's also true that in any given year, 90% of the people who are homeless in any given year will not be homeless in the next year.
I want to say, make a comment about the conditions homeless people have to live in shelters. We're working at, the shelter we're working at now, it has 425 beds. And the sanitary conditions are terrible, not because of the guests, but because of the staff and because of the way the shelters are situated. Beds, bunk beds, one on top of each other, 5 feet apart, poor air quality, poor ventilation. They don't clean the shelter that well. And I'm saying homeless people deserve housing, not shelters. Our shelter's on an island in Boston Harbor. This goes out, lit out through by a bridge, and the homeless guests are bussed in from our intake center in Boston. And many of them get on the first bus in the morning, 5:30, it's full every morning back into Boston to go to work. They work hard. So the homeless people are not lazy. Most of them work very hard at very low-paying jobs. They still can't afford a place to live.
Well, the average cost of a shelter bed on an annual basis in the United States today is around $18,000, okay? That, the cost of a Section 8 in many communities is, you know, the annual value is probably between $4,000 and $6,000. So, you know, you could do anywhere from 4 to 5 families could probably be housed
for what we're
same cost of a shelter.
I'm not evil. I'm not Satan. I hate homeless people.
But
only for this fact.
Okay.
I'm poor. I don't have everything I need in life and everything I want in life. But I do have 3 jobs. I work hard, and I take care of my basic needs first. A caller earlier said that, you know, he's keeping whole with cigarettes and soda. Cigarettes you don't need. Soda you don't need. Food you do need. You know what I mean? It's not glamorous to be poor. You know, it's not fun to be poor. But after one night on the street, after that first night, all right, I'll give you the first night, but after that it's completely by choice. You can go get a job. You can make it on $400 a month. It's hard. It's very, very hard. And it's not fun, and you will not have any luxury. But you will not be homeless.
But again, I think the caller doesn't appreciate that, you know, many of the homeless are working, and they are doing exactly what he's saying that he wants them to do. They're trying to get out, and in fact, most will succeed in doing so.
Now, if all the churches would get together and raise a fund to get it started, I truly believe protests, they will have a syntax for the homeless, have a protest march in Washington, D.C. to let the president know that it's a waste of money to send trillions of dollars to try to go to Mars or to try to go to the moon where there's homeless people, children, and people losing their jobs. It's a sin. So why not have a syntax, a nationwide syntax for the homeless?
I know of some facilities, too, here in Cleveland area where crime has actually gone down in facilities because or around facilities that have been opened up for the homeless, primarily because, you know, there is more monitoring of what is going on, and there is a place for folks to go where they don't have to be out on the street and knocking some little old lady down to get their next loaf of bread. They actually have a place where they can get that. And I know of several examples where that has actually happened, where crime has gone down.
And I think there are actually studies documenting that in some areas crime has gone down because the people tend to be better supervised.
Right. The theory was that they were going to put that money from the institutions into community-based mental health. They have not. They never did it right from the beginning, and the last few years they have taken more and more money away. And so some of these folks, they can't get to their appointments to get the medicine or whatever, and they don't, and then they're out in the street, and they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable to other people taking advantage of them and so forth. And so I think it calls the question of what do we value.
I'm one of those people that you would never know to be homeless if you saw me away from any of the facilities here. If you didn't see me with my personal possessions with me, there's no way you could tell anything about it. There are a lot of people here like that. Most of the people here in Denver, I bet, that live within two blocks of the facility I'm talking from at this moment have no idea whom is whom. You know, they have to be pointed out. What most people know is what they've seen in the way of the stigma that's attached.
I think sometimes that the people who are middle class or upper middle class forget that at any moment they too can become homeless. There's a mistaken belief that it's only the people who are close to poverty. I myself was a professional. I had a very good job. I had a beautiful home and a few weeks of illness and then lengthy hospitalization resulted in me being homeless and unable to work for a period of time. So, you know, it's not just people who work at McDonald's who are going to be homeless.
They get ticketed, and they get tickets that are up to $1,000 or for 30 days in jail if they don't pay it. And what happens is they end up doing community service in order to pay those off.
You can get ticketed for $1,000 for
going
to the bathroom?
For peeing behind the bushes.
Okay, now, but, of course, we assume that the reason Portland does that is because there's just lots of toilets out there for people to use who are homeless, so there's really no reason for them to pee in the bushes.
Well, that would not be correct, yeah. There are not public toilets available, especially at certain hours.
Well, if there's not public toilets available, then they must be finding these people because there's so much housing available that every homeless person could get into a house, so that's why they don't have to pee in the bushes.
Yeah, that would also be wrong, of course.
How much of a factor is this in the life of homeless people in Portland? In other words, is it like, oh, I heard somebody got busted for sleeping last month, and it's like a rarity, or is it a constant thing you got to worry about?
I would say it's a constant thing you would have to worry about.
The main reason, I think, is that the authorities have always put aside a number of places, houses, where they could rent to people at least a room or so if they were homeless otherwise. So there is a whole set of what we call accompanied housing, where you have from the cities houses, apartments rented, which are rented out to people with difficulties. And this housing is accompanied. This means there are social worker or people who are looking from time to time to the inhabitants. And by this system, even people who have difficulties to live on their own are able to have a home of some kind. These are not generous homes, but at least they have a room and share usually some rooms some people share an apartment. And so this model has helped us in the last 10 years to overcome, by and large, homelessness. It is very important to give people a real right that they can claim for a place to live, and that and that those who have difficulties to live on their own are accompanied.
It's Michael Shapcott from Toronto.
Welcome,
I'm co-chair of Canada's National Housing and Homelessness Network. We're a community-based network of housing advocates from one part of Canada to the other. And I just wanted to jump in as people are offering some at least faint praise of the Canadian federal government to say that while it's true that we have a minister in charge of homelessness who is exceptionally sympathetic, because she's a former social worker before she got into politics, the reality is, however, that the sympathy stops at the point of actually delivering anything. And all of the federal, provincial, territorial governments signed this important document called the Affordable Housing Framework Agreement. Under that agreement, about $1 billion in Canadian dollars over 5 years was to be committed to new affordable housing, and we saw this as being a really significant step to reversing the growing homelessness in Canada. We're now more than 2 years into this agreement. Our national government has only spent $88 million of the $1 billion that it promised, so less than 9% of the amount of money they promised. And I, for one, get quite frustrated when I hear our national homelessness minister going all over the country saying, terrible situation, we really love you and we'd like to do something about it, when, in fact, our government, after making a substantial commitment, is actually